Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. Today's program is a milestone in the history of All Things Jessamine. I'll tell you why and we'll introduce our guest right after this word from one of our great sponsors here on Jess FM.
Hello, this is Glenn Downs with the Prescription Pad here in Nicholasville. We have some exciting news to announce. Lynn Gore, pharmacist, has recently joined our staff. Here's Lynn to tell you a little bit about himself.
Hi, my name is Lynn Gore. I'm excited to bring over 25 years of experience to the Prescription Pad. We appreciate the opportunity to serve you and your family.
Come see us on the Nicholasville Bypass in the Keene Center between Anytime Fitness and Copper River Grill. We are the Prescription Pad, a different kind of pharmacy.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you as we continue to learn more about our county and its people, its places, and its things. Today is a milestone in our program. Back on December 15th, 2014, December 20th, 2014, we aired the very first program of this All Things Jessamine. And today is October the 13th, 2018, and today is our 200th episode. It's kind of funny because I've had a guy here at the station, Will Osborne, look at me about every 6 months and say, "Aren't you running out of ideas?" I don't think he thought that it would last. So today we're going to talk about radio because that's where or how we're able to bring this to you. With me today is the owner of WNJK, better known as Jess FM, Jonathan Smith. Good morning.
Morning, Doug. How are you?
Well, I am glad to be here and especially to make 200. I don't know that when you and I first talked in the fall of 2014 that I had in my mind that we'd be sitting here with 200 episodes.
It's a great local program, and as you know, there's really no end to it because there's an unlimited number of stories out there about Jessamine County and about Nicholasville.
There is, and we hope to reach as many as we can, although there are some, I must say, and I've told people privately that I would love to do, but there's nobody around to do them. You know, there's nobody living maybe in the family, some businesses especially, but we'll do the best we can. So we are at a 200th episode. Today, we're going to talk about radio in Jessamine County. Let's start by talking about Jess FM because that is the station which drives this. How did it all come about? Now you, and you might tell some of your background, you come from a family, especially your dad, who was involved heavily in radio over in Lincoln County, and you still are, I guess.
I am. My father went to Eastern Kentucky University, which was a state teacher's college at that time, and wanted to be a school teacher and a basketball coach. He was originally from Clay County, Kentucky.
Oh, really?
He met my mother there, and they started a family before he even finished school. My oldest brother was born there. And my father had been in the ROTC, so he went into the Army for 2 years out of Eastern. And when he got out of the Army, he had a real interest in radio and not so much in school teaching because at that time, because of the pay.
Right.
And they already had two children at that point by the time he got out of the Army, and it just didn't pay enough to raise a family. So he went to Cincinnati and took a job with Western Southern Life Insurance Company during the day. And at night, he was going to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music in their radio and TV graduate program. Then that fall, while he was at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, a new radio station went on in Manchester, Kentucky, his hometown. And they thought about who they wanted to work there.
Yeah.
And there was Calvin Smith, the local boy who was already studying to be in radio.
Right.
And they hired him. So he dropped out, quit a job making really good money at Western Southern Life Insurance Company to make a lot less doing something that he liked. So he went to Manchester and started there. And my mother and father, from the time they married in college until they settled in Stanford 14 years later, moved 32 times.
Oh, my gosh.
Between the Army and the radio. So my father would get a call from an adjoining town and say, "We hear you're doing great things. We'll pay you $25 more a week and pay your moving expenses," and they would move.
That's big money back then.
Yeah, it was. So they moved around. My father went through several stations in Kentucky, in Indiana, West Virginia, went to Atlanta, Georgia, came back and was in Corbin, Kentucky, in the they built a new station there called WIGO, and it was real hot. And there were three owners that wanted to sell it. And they said, "If you sell it, we'll give you X number of dollars." And it was when he did sell it for them, it was enough X number of dollars that he got the money in $100 bills, and he covered the coffee table in the living room. He always told my mom, "One day I'll cover that table with $100 bills." So whatever it was, maybe $4,000, yeah. $4,100 yeah. bills or something like that.
Yeah.
But that became the down payment to buy WRSL in Stanford in 1965. Okay. So my father had been at a lot of places. In fact, the first station he was at in Manchester, he was a 1.5% owner. They gave him some ownership. So he had had some ownership here and there, but now he became an owner, and then they move no more. That's where they stay. My father died young. He was 55 when he died.
Did the station in Stanford just come available, and he was like, okay, did he hear about it? How did he know?
Well, that's what happened. He had that money, and now he was looking for a station to buy into. And he heard about the station in Stanford. I never knew when I was growing up, but I learned since then, because I'm a lot like you as far as history goes, and I wonder about things and businesses and how they come about. At one time, I was looking for recordings and pictures and memorabilia from WRSL. And I'd asked around, and a guy I went to high school with, whose father, he had been estranged from his father. His father lived in Florida and had been a disc jockey at WRSL before my father even came there. The station went on in 1961, and he came there in 1965. And his father was running a pawn shop in Florida. So I went to meet him. I went to talk to him, and he had recordings on reel-to-reel. And we sat there at the counter of his pawn shop outside of Tampa, Florida, and I dubbed them all off into my computer. Stayed there for 2 days at the counter as he conducted business. We recorded off these reel-to-reels, and it was fabulous. But he had known my father. He hadn't worked for him in Stanford, but he had worked for him in Corbin. And he is the one that carried the story from Stanford to Corbin and told him that station might be for sale.
Oh.
So I finally found out it was Daryl Farley who did that. But Daryl had all these great recordings, and he even had recordings of my father when he was at WIGO and when he was at WNTT in Tazewell, Tennessee. And it was like finding a treasure chest. It was like being on a treasure hunt, finding a treasure chest. And all these great recordings. Daryl was very ambitious, and he would call promoters and get media passes to shows in Louisville and wherever. But he had interviews, long-form interviews with Jane Mansfield that he did in her dressing room.
Wow.
While Mickey Hargitay's
talk
there.
Talk about a treasure chest. Where away?
Well, it's a real treasure chest. Man. He said at one point her treasure chest fell out. She had a wardrobe malfunction.
Oh, my goodness.
So those are great stories, and I have all those recordings now, and I know that story. So we wound up there in 1965. My father continued he owned the radio station in Liberty at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we can talk more about that as we talk. But back then, you couldn't own stations in the same service, either AM or FM, where their primary signals overlapped. So the closest he could get to Stanford was Liberty. So he had Liberty too, and then at one point he and a partner bought a television station in Crossville, Tennessee, and that was a tough time because there were only three networks and there wasn't a lot of independent programming.
Right.
So it was one of those stations that had a lot of religious programming, like Jerry Falwell and that type of stuff. So that would have been in the 70s. And then my father went to work for the state. He was the assistant secretary of state, and he was at one point for Frances Jones Mills when she was the secretary of state.
Yeah.
And then when she was the treasurer, he was an investment officer in the treasurer's office, because that's what his degree had been in college, was in finance and with a teaching certificate.
That's back in the time when state government officers used to switch around. She was state treasurer, and I think Drex Davis was the secretary of state, and then the next term they'd switch.
They had to, because you couldn't succeed yourself.
Right.
So they called it musical chairs.
Yeah, exactly.
So they would just completely swap. Their whole staff would just change offices.
Yeah. Now, how many kids? There's a lot of you guys in your family. One girl, I think.
There's six of us. Five boys, and then my sister was the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a 17-year spread between the oldest, my brother Calvin, and then my sister Amy, who was the youngest. And so she was born in July of 1970, and he graduated high school in May of 1971. So he and I fall as the fourth of the six. But he and my brother David, who did all our engineering and has passed away this past January, they were more like uncles than brothers, especially to her. So my mother had a very dry sense of humor. Somebody would say, oh, that's a large spread. She would say, yeah, the first three are from my first husband, but so were the second three.
Were all of you kids involved in radio in some way?
At one time or another, yes. And the thing you might find interesting is that people in Stanford and Lincoln County, people that knew me when I grew up in high school and college working on the radio there, know me and call me John Logan, because almost all of us working there were Smiths. So we started using our middle names.
Yeah,
my brother was Philip Lane. I was John Logan.
Oh.
My oldest brother Calvin was C. Lynn. So people didn't realize it was a whole family of Smiths working the radio station.
Right, right, and that's smart. So at some point in time, though, you, especially you, because we got to tie you here to JSFM, you got out of, I guess, college or got out of high school, decided to go to college. You're an attorney. How did that come about?
Right, I went to school in Eastern as well. Never thought about another school. Mm-hmm. Never even applied anywhere else. It's just where I was going to go. It's kind of where my parents went, and I wanted to go. And while I was there, my father died. I told you he died young at 55. And he kind of changed everything because my father was a jack of all trades. Mm. He did everything. He wasn't an attorney, but he would fill out his own FCC paperwork. Once he saw what someone else did, he would copy it and do it himself. That kind of stuff. So then I started, you know, I was at a crossroads in life. Mm. What do you want to do? I wanted more education. I wanted to arm myself for the future, whatever it is. So I went to law school too. And while I was at law school, I went to law school in Michigan, and I met a guy that we decided we'd go into practice together, and he was from Chicago. So I went to Chicago, and I spent 22 years practicing law there. But almost the whole time I was there, I was an absentee radio station owner because my mother had taken over the two stations we had in Stanford, and my mother had been a stay-at-home mom. She was an empty nester by that time, but she really wasn't a business person. She really didn't want to do it. She did a good job of maintaining the status quo. But I knew, looking at all the rest of the family, the only one with any kind of entrepreneurial bent was me, and it was going to be me. So I became an absentee radio station owner 400 miles away at the age of 29 and did a pretty good job. I improved the signal. I improved it so much that I ended up selling that station, the FM station there, to Educational Media Foundation, which does the KLOV format. Mm-hmm. And after that, brought in another station through the FCC allocation process, kind of replaced that, and started growing the group. So it went from those two stations to ultimately 16.
Now, you mentioned David. We know he was a broadcast engineer. And in fact, it was really odd. When we first met, we figured out David and I had known each other from years before through NVL. He had done some work over there a long time ago. But any of your other brothers or sister, after they got out of high school or college, did they stay in radio in any way?
Well, my brothers did to a certain extent. My sister never really did. She got her teaching certificate, and she married a man in the Air Force, and they moved to Guam right out of high school, and then they moved back, and mm-hmm. she's back here, and she's raised her family here, but she never really did work in radio. But everyone else did. My brother Calvin, the oldest, he was a really good radio announcer, and he wound up at KET working there for a while. Wow. And David had worked at Channel 36 as a broadcast engineer. And David also worked at KET for a while. Mm-hmm. And then finally, he just worked for us full time because we had so much to take care of. And my brother Philip did as well. And at some point, he went off and got another job as a respiratory therapist. But everybody had worked in radio for television. My three oldest brothers went to Tennessee and worked in that station that we owned in Crossville for a year and a half or 2 years.
Has it filtered on down to grandkids? I know Brad, your nephew, does some ball game work, I think, over there. What about some of the other? What about your children?
Well, my children are very aware of it. I got two of them that are working in radio full or part-time in Florida right now. And you mentioned my nephew Brad, but David's son Logan, he's helping with the Lincoln County football game broadcast on WPBK because our sports director has become the athletic director.
Tim Estes, yeah.
Yeah, he's the athletic director now at Lincoln County. He had retired there, and they were looking for a part-time athletic uh-huh. director, and he's perfect for that job. So he has too many duties on game night to be a part of the broadcast. So Logan has stepped in, David's son, and he's doing an extremely good job.
Now, at some point along the line, there became a frequency open of 105.9. That is what we have now here at JSFM, but it didn't start that way, right?
It's an interesting story. 105.9 was originally licensed to Wilmore. Mm-hmm. And Vernon Baldwin, originally there was 96.3 allocated to Wilmore. But in a frequency switch around that included 96.9 in Paris upgrading to 50,000 watts, a lot of things got moved around. So 105.9 landed in Wilmore. And my friend Vernon Baldwin had built the station and was operating it, and Vern was always trying to move to a bigger population, trying to move it into where more people could hear the station. He had stations on the rim of Cincinnati, too, and did the same kind of thing. So as we looked at it, and I consulted a lot with Vern, I said, you know, 95.3 works right on the Jessamine Fayette County line, but it's blocked by 105.9 because that's what they call an IF channel, which is 53 or 54 channels above or below the channel you're on, which is a channel you have to protect. But they have this one-step rule. I think you can move to it. Mm-hmm. So that's what ended up happening. He ended up moving 105.9 to 95.3, and it's on that tower out there on 1980 across from Brandon Crossing. That's where 95.3 is, which started as 105.9.
Yeah.
That left a hole, technically, for 105.9.
Right.
So it was then allocated to a town of Bergen because the FCC prefers towns of first service.
Sure.
So it was allocated there, And now the FCC has auctions, so you have to bid on it. And Vern bid on the station and bought it through the auction and built it. And he really wasn't as happy with the signal as he thought he would be. And there was no way to move it closer to Lexington because it already was short space with 95.3, which replaced it.
Mm-hmm.
So it got built where it's at now, out near the Kentucky River, and has a really good signal in all of Jessamine County. It just doesn't serve the north side of Lexington like he would like to have done. So without really any prospects for it, we simulcast WPBK on it for a couple of years.
Oh, okay. Just to, some Stanford station.
Right, to provide programming.
Yeah.
To program the station. And Vernon had died, and his widow, Marcy, really wanted to do something with the station, and I looked around and tried to find a buyer for her, and then I realized, you know, there's a real niche here. There's a hole in Nicholasville for radio programming, mm-hmm. because everything's been migrated to Lexington. Mm-hmm. The more I looked at it, the more I realized Nicholasville needs a radio station. We can take this station, we can target Nicholasville and Jessamine County and provide a very much needed service for there, and that's what we did. So I made a deal with Marcy, and we built out this station, and I think it's been a huge success, really.
You know, that brings up the reason for the hole was WNVL had gone. Now, we'll do a little bit of history on that, I guess, maybe at this point. In 1961, Catherine Peden, who was at that time or later a state representative, as a matter of fact, was the one that put WNVL on the air. I was born in 62, so it was a year before I was even born. And I grew up listening to this station. And all the people that were involved with it, there was some older people that some of our older listeners may remember. Charlie Esposito comes to mind. Dennis Nelson was involved. Bill Laney, actually, is the person who hired me, worked there. Dale Wright had the talk show, who was years ahead of his time in the talk show business. But NVL went on the air. Now, in 1996, Bill Laney died. He was the owner of the entire station at that time. And he died. His widow decided she didn't want to deal with it. She sold it. The transmitter still sets up on Groggins Ferry, at least what's left of it, but it's still on the air. I'm not sure what kind of program they have, but 1250 is, it's not WNVL, but it's still 1250 AM frequency. So that's the radio station that used to be here. That's where I got my start and worked for several years. And that's the reason there was a hole, 1996. And it's amazing, Jonathan, how many people over those years would look at me in Jessamine County and say, we need a radio station. We need a radio station. Of course, my response was, well, we need some money. We need some money. And there has to be a spot available. And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand. You don't just pull out a checkbook and open a radio station. There has to be a frequency available. A lot of factors go into it. So you had the frequency. You had the 105.9, and that's when you decided Jessamine County needs a station once again.
That's right. And that, you're right. People don't understand that. So technically, the radio stations are allocated based on distances to other stations and interference to existing or planned stations. Mm-hmm. And right now, anywhere in this area, there are no frequencies available. Unless the FCC rules change that allowed interference to certain types of channels or classes, then there are no frequencies available. The new frequencies that have come on recently in Lexington, and there have been quite a few of those, are low power translators that repeat AM stations or mm-hmm. HD2 channels. And my concern as a broadcaster, as a lifelong broadcaster, is that we're jamming up the FM band like we did the AM band.
Yeah.
There used to be able to drive out of an FM signal until you just got static. Now you don't get to the point where they're static. You get to the point where there's another station coming in on top.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. They've added so many. And our industry's done it to ourselves. We asked for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the FCC in the very beginning when they started out, the broadcasters asked for government regulation. They asked for somebody to be the traffic cop to tell people when they could broadcast and from where and how much power, because they were just interfering with each other. And that goes back to the 1920s. And today, the FCC has become so much more than that. It's a regulatory agency that collects a lot of money from us regulatory fees. Not only do they regulate who can broadcast from where and when, they regulate speech. You know, we're really not part of the free press that our founding fathers anticipated in the First Amendment, because we're told what we can say and can't say. Mm-hmm. You can publish any dirty word you want in a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
We say we get in trouble.
Right. Right. And it's a whole lot different. A whole lot. Well, you know, we've talked about this year with the elections going on in equal time and things like that. And, you know, if newspapers had to do that because they publish a story about somebody that's in office, well, imagine the free press that all the candidates would get. So, yeah, it's a whole lot different.
Well, the politicians make the laws, so they get to decide.
Yeah, exactly.
So we don't have to sell radio time. It would be crazy for us not to, but we don't have to sell radio time to local politicians. Mm-hmm. So if you had a competition and we decided we didn't want to sell it, we don't have to.
Yeah.
But we have to sell advertising to federal candidates.
Yes.
So the congressman and the senator, even if we don't want to sell it to them, we have to because they make the laws, and they've made that a law.
You know, this station has filled a niche, and I, of course, being here every day, hear a lot of comments about the things. One of the main things that I have heard is the programming. People like the programming because of what we play on here as far as music is concerned. But you've done more. I mean, you've wanted to try to make it local as you can, and that's a sports. You know, right now we're in the midst of football season. Will Osborne is bringing us these Jessamine County football games from both high schools, which I know for him is sometime a programming nightmare. But we'll get into basketball. He does the baseball, the softball, and that's an important part. And all of your stations are like that, aren't they?
I think that's the only purpose for the radio station.
Yeah.
The music, my belief, the music is filler. The music is there to entertain us while we're waiting for more pertinent, relevant information. And that comes in the form of the weather forecast and the community bulletin board and the news and the sports and what we say mm-hmm. in between the records and the advertisements. Advertisements are very important because that tells us where we can get local goods and services.
Right.
So all that's very important to a local radio station. We can make the station sound just like any other station, and at certain times it does, but what's important is the local flavor. Mm-hmm. We need to serve the local people with the local information that they can't get anywhere else. And that's what all local radio is about. If this radio station were just a jukebox, there would be no reason to listen to it.
Yeah.
Because music's available everywhere.
Right. Especially now.
Right.
You know, it's not like it was when you grew up and when I grew up in it, and that you had, like you mentioned a while ago, in Lexington, you had three TV stations, well, four with KET.
Right.
That was it. And you had a few radio stations. But now with the all the different ways you can get music and information, whether it be the internet or it's just so much competition out there, you got to be unique.
So originally in Lexington, let's just take for instance, you originally had three AM operators on 590, 630, and 1300. And then as FM came along, the AM operators would apply for the FM licenses, mm-hmm. and there really wasn't enough business for other people to come in. So you really wound up at one point with three AM and FM combos. And then the AM and FM combo split off. 1300 was by itself, and 98.1, which was double Q, was by itself.
Right.
So you really had WVLK and WLAP AM and FM. That was two operators. Mm-hmm. 1300 was the third, and then 98.1 was the fourth. Mm-hmm. So today, we basically have three or four operators in Lexington, but instead of there being six signals, there's about 21 signals.
Yeah.
Because they moved in under the rules every station that they could when they allowed the deregulation of the mm-hmm. and the consolidation. So like I told you before, when my father was in Stanford and he wanted to own another station, he had to go to Liberty. It was as close as he could get. So they changed the rules to where you could have overlapping ownership in the same service, and now it's even more deregulated, and they're looking at deregulating it further to where in a smaller market outside of the top 30 or so markets, you can own every signal, which I'm against. Mm-hmm. As a small market broadcaster, I think it's a bad idea. I think more voices are better. It's not so much about it being a monopoly, it's about it being service, and I'll tell you why. So these stations that have come into Lexington have not come out of thin air. They've come from Danville and Harrodsburg and Cynthiana and Carlisle and Richmond and Georgetown. Those towns lost their FM stations. Mm-hmm. They lost that service. They lost the Friday night ball games. Mm-hmm. They lost the local flavor. Those stations have come to Lexington as the third or fourth or fifth or sixth station in a group that's used to do something different than what it would be used in those communities. So those communities are poorer for it because mm-hmm. radio stations help to drive the economy. Mm-hmm. The advertising and the information that's exchanged in a radio station helps to drive a local economy. And I firmly believe that the deregulation of the ownership and the consolidation has hurt small communities. I think it's hurt those towns that I just named to lose their local radio stations.
Right.
But there's no going back. That won't go back. So a town the size of Lexington ended up attracting the large conglomerates. You know, the two largest radio stations owners in the country are here. iHeartMedia, which was Clear mm-hmm. Channel, and of course Cumulus, both of which went through recent bankruptcies. And neither of those bankruptcies had anything to do with the radio business. Radio business is still very strong.
Yeah.
What it had to do with was crushing debt. Yeah, they took on so much debt in their consolidation that it was unmanageable.
Yeah.
So just for instance, iHeartMedia, which was Clear Channel, they shed $10 billion in debt. Billion with a B. They had $20 billion in debt. They got rid of about half of it through the bankruptcy process. They'll go for another 10 years probably, file another bankruptcy and get rid of more debt. Get it down to where it's manageable
right.
at some point. But a lot of people, they invested. They paid high multiples. They paid high cash flow multiples for stations because they would target the best stations, the biggest signals in a market. You know, they came to Lexington and they started putting together the best signals. Mm-hmm. And they both did it because of those ownership limits. So that's what had happened. That's been bad for radio. But it's also given us an opportunity because there are seven radio stations licensed to Jessamine County. None of them serve Jessamine County. They're all marshaled in on Lexington. So on the FM band, you've got 95.3, which is contemporary Christian religious programming. You've got 99.1, which is mostly spoken word religious programming. You've got 102.5, which is part of the Cumulus group now.
Which, by the way, started in Jessamine County.
Right, started right here in Nicholasville.
Yeah.
It was a sister station to WNVL.
And Bill Laney and Al Snyder and myself, I owned ownership in that too.
Right.
And it was funny, I'll tell you a story about that. I was working at the county clerk's office then, so I was kind of somewhat of a silent partner, even though I was doing some on-air work. And I remember that we had people that would call and want to buy the station, but they weren't serious about it. So we decided that we'd just make up some outrageous figure that people would like, oh, okay, and leave us alone. One day, Bill Laney called me and said, you need to come over here. And I came across. He said, you're not going to believe what happened. He said, these people called and wanted to know if we'd sell. And I gave them that outrageous figure, and they said, do you want cash or check? What do we do? And I said, well, so we talked, and we decided that, you know, we probably weren't going to get that offer again, that maybe it was time. So that's when we sold the both stations, because we wouldn't sell one without the other. And then later, Laney had the opportunity to buy the AM 1250 back. But yeah, 102.5 started right here. And it was odd because our programming, which was, oh, I don't know the name of it, but we found an article in Billboard magazine, and it talked about the top 10 places in the United States that doesn't have this type programming. And Lexington was one of them.
Well, it was urban, right?
Urban.
Black urban.
Contemporary.
Yeah.
That was it. So we thought, well, why not? Well, now you remember WNVL was old country.
Right.
And had been for years. So here's this three guys who were trained in old country music opening up an urban contemporary station. It was so odd the first day, Jonathan, I can remember. We had one studio with glass between it, and on this studio, you were playing George Jones and Merle Haggard, and right through the window, we were playing this urban contemporary Ice-T or Ice Cube or whatever. It was really weird hearing that music come out of that station, but it worked.
It was a big success.
It was a huge success, and within 60 days, without doing any kind of advertising or push, you know, we were like third in the market.
But then all it takes is a bigger powered signal, which is ultimately what happened.
Exactly.
To adopt that format, and
right.
it knocked it out.
Takes it over.
So then the other station that's in Jessamine County is 107.1, the other FM, which got moved from Danville, which is also religious music. It's another Caleb brand, Air One. So you got those four stations, none of which are, you know, they're all doing niche formatting for the Lexington market.
Right.
And then the AM is the same thing. You got 770, which has been here now for a pretty long time, like 30 years, but it's on the same channel as a Clear Channel station. And I don't mean the company Clear Channel.
Right.
I mean the designation that it's a nighttime Clear Channel in New York City. So they sign off at night. So you got 770 and then 1250, which was WNVL, then was doing talk until a recent sale. And I think they're doing Spanish programming now, Hispanic. And then you have 1380, which moved from Winchester to Nicholasville, and it's a Catholic radio.
Wow.
So you can see you've got seven signals licensed to Jessamine County. They're all doing niche formatting. not wide market appeal for the Lexington market. Mm-hmm. So that's why Jess FM, with our wide appeal musical format and our content, everything else is targeted at the 50,000 people that live in Jessamine County.
Right. And it's working. Well, the All Things Jessamine thing, get to that for a moment, because that's why we're here today, folks. This is our 200th episode of All Things Jessamine. I remember the first time that in this studio, now we're on Main Street, used to be out in Edgewood Plaza. It was back in the back of what was the old Thompson's Food Town. They had split it up into different offices. They had an office in the back. That's where their studio was. One, two, three little rooms, best I can remember, in a bathroom. But I think that was the place I first met you. As we came, we had a meeting out there, and I think at the time, the best I can remember, we were talking about the possibility of me doing a regular show. Well, I didn't need that at that time because of my circuit clerk job, but you came up with this idea of a history program. Of course, I would have been involved and still am with the Facebook group You Grew Up in Jessamine County If. We have thousands of members, and we talk about Jessamine County history, and I think you knew that, the best I can remember. But when you told me, what about that? I had never thought about it, and to be honest with you, I wish we had done this kind of program at WNVL 30 years ago.
Right.
It has been so interesting for me, because I have learned things about people that I've known forever that I didn't know before. And it's been good for me, too, to be able to talk to people and to interview them. Now, one other reason it's been very important, and you mentioned this a little while ago, when you talked about that gentleman, you were sitting there listening to those video, those audio recordings. You still have those, I guess.
I do.
And your dad.
Right.
You are able at this point to flip a switch and hear your father's voice, which has got to be very cool. I don't have that. I don't have any recordings of my father. Our All Things Jessamine program, since it started, we have had four guests who have passed away. And one in particular, every time I see their children, they say to me, I am so thankful that at any time I can listen to my daddy's voice again. That has made it worth it for me.
What I would say to you, Doug, if you were asking me for advice, would be find the oldest people in this county and start recording their stories.
Yeah.
Because and I know the business stuff is interesting, but people that maybe were never in business, the little old lady that's been a member of her church for the last 80 years, that's 100 years old or whatever, she's got a great story. Everybody's mm-hmm. got a great story if you listen. And that's what we do. That's what radio does. And if you think about it, everything that radio does well is a story.
Sure.
The songs are stories. Mm-hmm. The advertisements, if done right, are stories. Mm-hmm. The sports play-by-play is a story that you're listening to as it's unfolding.
Right.
So what radio does is stories, and your show is all about life stories.
That's what it is. And we have been so blessed to have so many people that have stepped up and said, yeah, I'll do that. And in fact, some of them even sharing stories that it's not easy to share. One of the most compelling programs we've had was with our former police chief, Barry Waldrop, whose father was killed in Vietnam. Barry was 15. He was an only child. He was 15 when it happened. And I found out that up to that point, Barry really had never talked about it. But he came in this room and he opened up. And I've had more people say to me that they listened to it and they shed tears listening to his story about what he went through at 15 years old, losing his father in Nam. You know, it's very moving, and it's sometimes it's very humorous, and you know, it's just all emotions are involved, but it's cool because you do get to use your imagination a little bit and thinking while you're listening to us, well, what do those guys look like, or what are they talking about, and what did it look like, that story they're telling. So I am appreciative of the fact that I'm able to do it, and especially of our guest Jonathan, that they've come in to help us out.
I agree with you.
It's a great thing.
I think you're providing a great service. You do a great job. I was listening last Saturday, and I thoroughly enjoyed that program. And you do a good job of getting the story out, and I think that's important.
Well, you know, it's sometimes us radio guys, I've been asked over the years, and my constant answer is, I'm just full of hot air. You know, you and I both have been involved long enough that it's second nature at this point. But at some point in time, we had to start, and I don't know about you, but I was scared to death, because growing up, I was a very shy child. This microphone brought me out of my shell.
Most of your radio announcers are introverts.
Uh-huh.
They like sitting in a room talking to people as opposed to standing in front of a room talking to people.
Right.
So a lot of radio announcers, and there's some that are extroverted too, that get up in front of a crowd of 500 people and they mm-hmm. can own the room. But most people that have done what we've done, we like doing it in a room like this, where we picture the listeners, but they're not looking at us.
And that's what got me able to, I think, do it to start with, is because it didn't really realize that there was anybody on the other side. I was just talking, and I was talking about a song. And the only time that I ever got absolutely nervous to the point of thinking I was going to pass out was the very first time that I ever filled in for Dale Wright on his talk show, because I knew what kind of audience he had. I was scared to death. You know, these people calling me, and I was 17, 18 years old, wanting to talk about the political realm, and I had no clue. But it helped me to become what you just referred to as the extrovert. You know, all this announcing that I've done in the public, whether it be a veteran ceremony or a football game or a beauty pageant, it's only because radio got me ready for it. And it's been a big help.
You talked about getting started and being scared. I did a lot of sports broadcasting, mm-hmm. and I started that when I was in high school. And so I would be dealing with the coaches and the players that I went to school with or whatnot. But my father would give me advice. He would listen. And I always remember that. Anytime I was given advice, I mean, it stuck with me today. And this goes back a long time. I came home. I was living at home. Of course, I was still in school. And he said, "What happens if the basketball player misses the front end of a 1-1, does he get the second free throw?" And I said, "No, he doesn't get the second free. You got to hit the first one, get the second one." He said, "Well, when a shooter's shooting the front end of the 1-1, it wouldn't be the first free throw because there might not be a second one." So I had said, "He's at the line to shoot the first free throw, and in 1-1, it was a little thing, but it's something that stuck with me, and I would never ever do that again."
Right. It's kind of like, and you know, I think we all in radio slip up, but it's the rule of don't saying we'll be right back.
Right.
Because we're not going anywhere.
That's right.
We're not going to leave the room and come back an hour later. We're still there. So, yeah, little things like that, and that you have to learn, and hopefully you can remember forever. Jonathan, I just appreciate the fact that you have come in and brought the station to Jessamine County. We needed it. Jessamine County needed a radio station. A lot of people have said that to me, and a lot of people are glad it's here. And to be a part of it, I don't mind telling you, the first morning that I filled in for the morning show, I didn't have it yet. I was filling in for the fellow that was here. It had been 23 years since I had sat behind a microphone to do an actual DJ job. I felt like Dorothy. We're not in Kansas anymore because of the change with equipment. You know, I'm used to your brother would really appreciate this, David. I'm used to the yard and the cart machines and the reel-to-reels. And he and I had such a good time talking about the way it used to be.
Well, when you and I got started, Doug, there was always something mechanical moving in the studio.
Exactly.
It was either a turntable or a tape machine, something. And now the only thing turning is the fan and the computer.
That's it.
I mean, everything is computerized. And I don't like to pull back the curtain too much like the Wizard of Oz. Here to where people see it, because you and that's one thing to do with video too, is sometimes it changes the picture in the listener's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But our studio here at JSFM is very different than the studios that you and I came up in.
Oh, gosh.
That were cobbled together and there were wires hanging and this and
exactly.
that. So we make it more of a presentation. We make it more of like a studio than a control room.
Right.
Which are two different things, a control room. And we always dealt with control rooms.
We did. And I've talked to Will Osborne, who is a young pup and doesn't remember any of this stuff. And when I have mentioned to him about taking readings and using patch cords, and he looks at me like I got three heads. He has no clue what I'm talking about. But that's the way it was. And I miss it.
And queuing records.
Cue it. Back timing.
Yeah.
I mean, I miss it. It's a lost art.
Everybody knows about DJ scratching records.
Yeah.
What we were doing was we were queuing the record. So you go to where it starts and back it up like maybe a quarter of a turn.
Right.
So the turntable came up to speed before it hit that.
Right.
So when you threw the switch, the song started, because there would be dead air at the beginning of a record.
Mm-hmm. And of course, nowadays, kids, although it's changing, it's funny, vinyl's coming back, but up until a couple years ago, we had people in our community that didn't even know what a record was.
That's right.
And we were sitting there having to cue them, and like you say, I filled in for a station one time in Georgetown for a friend of mine at night, and all I had to do was replace the reel-to-reels. And there's people right now listening that, what in the world's a reel-to-reel? They have no clue. Or splicing. This program, All Things Jessamine, do you know how much time it would have taken to do this program back 30 years ago. You do, because of splicing and editing. Now it's so much easier. So,
and because of the length of the show, you would have had to run on a slow speed. It would have
exactly
been like a 7.5 inches per second instead of 15.
To have the time. Yeah. Things have certainly changed. Progress, folks. That's what it is. But that progress enables us to record our history.
That's right.
And that's what we do on this program, and we hope that we can continue doing it for a whole lot longer. And I just appreciate the fact that 200 episodes, we have a loyal following out there. We have people who listen to us in other states that used to live here that don't anymore. This is their connection back to home. And so hopefully we can continue doing that.
Well, Doug, I'd like to thank you. It's because of you that we really have a connection to the community. I firmly believe that small market radio stations like we're trying to do here need a local owner. And I'm not a local owner, but I'm doing the best I can to have local people involved. And, you know, we've got Will Osborne is not from Nicholasville, but he's certainly claimed it as his own now.
Sure.
And then John Branscombe, he does such a great job, and his heart's in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not running for the city council because he didn't want to give up his radio job for 3 months.
Yeah.
So he's committed to us.
Yeah. And that's, and by the way, folks, he's on Sunday afternoons, noon, with oldies. Oh, isn't that something? He's playing oldie oldies.
Right.
That's the thing that gets me, Jonathan, is the oldies that I remember are from the 50s and 60s.
Right.
But nowadays, the oldies are from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, and oldies has become an out, right, it's become an outdated radio term, really, because when I think oldies, I think about black leather jackets in the 50s.
Exactly.
I don't think about Aerosmith from the 70s.
But that's happened to
us,
hasn't it? Good luck in all your ventures. You got a bunch of stuff going on, I know, and radio stations. One other thing I want to say, you know, it's really nice. Will and I just kind of come in here and we get it done, and we hope we get it done right, but you all allow us to do that. We appreciate you doing that. I don't know how many more shows we'll do with All Things Jessamine. We'll keep doing them until we run out, I guess. But we'll try to continue to bring people to this microphone, learn more about us, because, you know, there's no saying you can't know your future unless you know your past. And I think that's absolutely true.
Keep up the good work, Doug.
Thanks. My thanks to Jonathan Smith for coming in this morning on this special 200th edition of All Things Jessamine and talking about radio here in Jessamine County. I appreciate you coming in too each and every week. You have made it so that we can do this program, and I hope you have enjoyed what we've been able to do and telling you about the history of our county, the people, the places, the things. It has been a blast for me. I've learned so much about people that I've known all my life, and I hope that it's brought you a lot of enjoyment as well. I don't know how long we'll be doing this thing. We'll do it as long as we can find stuff to talk about that is related to All Things Jessamine. And don't forget, I'm on every morning from 6 until 8 to get you up and going right here on Jessamine County's own radio station, Jess FM 105.9.